Thanks for tuning in to this continuing conversation we've been having at CORE around reading as it connects to social justice. I'm Linda Diamond, president and founder of CORE and the author of the Teaching Reading Sourcebook. Dyslexia is one of the most common word reading difficulties and has been estimated to affect as many as 15 to 20% of the population. Based on that, you might think that children are quickly identified and receive support right away. Unfortunately, that's far from true. Too often, these children are left on their own and don't get the support they need, particularly children of color and students living in poverty. They may struggle for years and suffer long-term academic and social-emotional consequences. I'm joined today by Dr. Keon Anderson, who was one of those children who was not identified in early childhood. In preschool, his mother noticed that something wasn't quite working, but was told by professionals that he would grow out of it. That often is the answer that parents are given. It was not until he was around 7 or 8 that he was diagnosed with a processing disorder and then went on for 3 years without special assistance and was held back in a grade. In fact, Keon was a freshman in high school reading at about second grade level before he was given the help he needed. When he entered high school, he didn't think he would graduate, but he did. Not only did Keon graduate from high school, he earned a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, and ultimately a doctor of education in educational leadership at the University of Southern California Rosier School of Education. Today, Dr. Anderson works to help Long Beach's underserved population, including first-generation, low-income, and ethnic minority students. He's a prolific writer, as evidenced by a large number of books. I think it's about 13 at least that he's authored. He's a motivational speaker and an active member of the community. It's really my privilege to introduce Keon, and I will stop there and welcome him, and he'll get deeper into his story. Hi, Dr. Anderson.
Hello, Linda, and hello, everybody listening.
I know I've already said a lot about you, but why don't you tell us about yourself in your own words, and when you first understood that you were having difficulty in school, and that struggling to learn to read and to learn was impacting you?
It's interesting because in preparation for this interview, I had to take a stroll down memory lane. And I remember being a very small kid and feeling like something was off, and even expressing to my mom, like, I'm not that smart. The other kids were in class and they get this stuff and I just don't. I would also stay up like many late nights, and I would watch like the paid programming, and they had like all of these toolkits that one could purchase that sort of help kids learn how to read. So like Hooked on Phonics or Sight Word sorts of tools that I didn't have at home. But I was just always truly frustrated. Like, this kid is like 2 years old and apparently they can read and they're able to operate in ways that I'm not. So very early on, like, I had this residing hopelessness in terms of my ability to achieve in an academic setting. I think something that made me even more frustrated was some of the messaging that I received from some of my teachers in regard to me not doing better out of this sort of notion that I was actively deciding that I didn't want to learn. It was sort of like, well, if you just tried harder, you would be better at this. And it was like, I'm really trying and I really want to be successful. But I don't know what the missing piece is. And that was something that, like, you know, I struggled with for years, being able to vocalize, like, this is sort of what I'm experiencing. I had a lot of people around who told me what it looked like as a result of, like, how I was performing, but I didn't have the words. So I knew early on there was something different. I didn't quite understand it. And for me, the first time that I really had someone who sat down and talked to me about it, I was in the ninth grade in high school. My special education teacher, Miss O, she actually sat me down and she's like, look, some of the stuff that worked for other kids just isn't gonna work for you. And that's fine. But I'm gonna show you how to learn in ways that work for your brain. And it was like night and day within like a 9-month period in terms of how I was able to access my education. I remember barely making it out of middle school. I think I had a couple D's and I probably was only pushed forward because I had an IEP. And then I made it to ninth grade and I had someone who slowed down and helped me make sense of it. So that was like the first time that I really understood, like, okay, so my brain is operating in some other way and I can relinquish the obligation that I have in my mind about doing things like other students. I need to do it in the way that works for me, and that is okay.
Wow. That's a long time to wait to find that out, and thank goodness for Mrs. O. You know, and I think that's the reality for many kids, that there's someone finally who gets it and then is able to really assist those kids. And can you describe a little bit about what she did? What was done that really did help you to start to learn?
So when I was working with Ms. O, she utilized a program called the Linda Mobel Program. I think I'm pronunciating that correctly. And what that meant was she took me back to the basics. So I was in the ninth grade going over, these are the sounds that are associated with the letters. This is what it looks like when you put these words, when you put these sounds together to make words. This is how you break up the word. This is 1,000 sight words that absolutely don't make any sense, but this is English and it's complicated. So you also need to learn these words so that it makes sense. She really helped me begin to differentiate in terms of breaking down and understanding words. And then she also utilized text that was closely related to things that I could relate to. So while I was in high school, we were reading the Bluford series and I read The Child Called It. And I read other books that sort of related to things that I could connect to based on like what I was seeing in my world.
Oh, that makes sense. That's interesting that it was the Linda Mobel system. That was really literally one of the very first early systems that taught phonology and systematic phonics and the linguistics. In fact, I was a principal in an elementary school and all of our kindergarten teachers used it to teach kindergarten to all the kids. So that prevented kids from, you know, developing problems or going too long. Given how long it took for you, how did you keep yourself motivated?
Before the ninth grade, I wasn't. So before high school, I went to school as a mandate. I understood that going to school was sort of a responsibility that I had. And if I was not attending school, then that meant that my mom would get this ticket and we'd have to go to court. And that was just way too much of a battle to fight. So before high school, I wasn't motivated in terms of academics. I had other interests. I danced. I was involved in a few activities in relation to like my mom's business. But school was sort of like my last resort. And then in the ninth grade, after meeting Ms. O and sort of learning the basics, it literally transformed what I thought was possible. And then at that point, it was like, okay, I'm doing so much better. Like I went from almost flunking out of middle school to having my first 4.0. And I was like, wait, I've got all A's. And the bulk of my classes were regular mean classes or general ed classes, with the exception of my reading development class. So I'm competing with my peers and I'm actually doing this. For me, that was exciting because I'd always wanted to be successful. I just didn't have the skills to be successful. So then after getting that, it was like, you know, I was on fire. My freshman year, I was in general ed with the exception of my reading class. My sophomore year, I began to take AP and honor classes. By the end of my sophomore year, I was taking community college classes. So it really sort of set the stage that other things that I wanted to be attainable were now attainable. I remember looking back and really being excited in middle school about taking like wood class or taking home economics. And I didn't get to take those classes because I had my reading development class. So in the ninth grade, it was like, if I do really well, I now can take electives, which means that I can get some exposure to other things that I'm gonna enjoy.
Wow, so things really transformed for you in high school.
Yeah.
How did that look, how did your mother look at that, given that she early on had was aware that something was different, but now she saw you kind of on fire in high school. What was the impact on her?
I think for my mom, she felt vindicated. She's like, I told these people and I've been telling them for a long time and no one is listening to me. So I think that for my mom, she knew that I could do it. She just didn't know what it was going to take in order for me to have, for me to turn around and be able to do it. So like in her mind, she's like, something's off. He's missing something here. And she didn't have the skills herself to be able to like help me navigate that process, but she was very active in advocating for me. All the way throughout. And when I hit my freshman year and like I was doing well, she was like, finally, someone's listening to what I've been saying all of these years.
Wow. Yeah, that's so amazing. And then after you've completed all these degrees, you became an author. And what led you to being an author, to wanting to be a writer?
So interestingly enough, while the Limits O's class, because I was doing well, I actually began this process of saving all of my work. Cause I was impressed, like, oh my God, I wrote this thing. Like one day this would be a really cool story. And then when I got into my second year of my doctorate program, I was like, I'm gonna finish this book I've been drafting for 10 years. So then I finally finished my first novel, which is more for teenagers, called A Moment to Either Define or Contribute to Who You Are. And I utilized a lot of like the beginning framing that I developed while I was in high school. So I'd save like little stories and essays and things that I wrote for classes. And I embedded those things into my first novel. And then from there, I was really looking to create stories for people who look like me and stories that I would have appreciated during my journey. So like one of the books that I recently published is called Prosper. And it's actually going through the process of this kid who wants to learn how to read and is having struggles and then has a teacher who's patient enough to walk them through the process and explain, this is what's happening in your brain. And in my mind, I figure if we could start that conversation earlier, then they can know that they're not alone. Because for years, I was isolated in my mind. Like the things that I'm trying to manifest and trying to produce for the world, they just weren't coming out. And I was holding myself to standards that were unrealistic for the way that my brain operates. Like in school, they're like, you wanna use Cornell notes where you're like writing questions on one side and the notes in the center. And I'm like, this is way too much processing. I'm actually confused. And it's not serving for me. And to like be affirmed and sort of, that really made a difference. And I really wanted to be able to write and produce things for kids so that they could have sort of that moment that I had when I was reading the Bluford series.
I'm curious, do you have a favorite book among the books that you wrote?
So I don't know if I have a favorite book. I think they all represent different things. I think that the book that made me cry was probably Prosper. being able to sort of see a story like mine on paper and being able to encourage other educators, like, you could slow down and you can see this. In my work and being in school settings, I've been in a space with a kid for 20 minutes. I'm like, so this is probably what's going on. It's not a bad kid. And it almost makes me wonder, like, maybe I can identify more and quickly because I also relate. Mm-hmm. But then I'm also wondering if people are not paying attention because it's like the signs are there. Like, how many times are they going to write an S backwards before you realize that that's not a three and that there's something off? So I think for me, that was a big hurdle, especially because I'm a professor now and I'm a writer. And I think that that book really speaks to sort of that journey. And like, it for me, it speaks to the responsibility that we have as educators in order to make sure that we're paying attention.
Yeah, and that leads into my last question quite nicely. And that is, what advice would you give other students, other children, but also educators?
So the advice that I would give other children, and the book that I wrote centered around this is, they say we don't. There's sort of this framing and this narrative that we build out about what our limitations are. So I wrote a book sort of centered around, you can jump out of a plane, you can scuba dive, you can travel the world, you can accomplish great things. Sort of like building that out. And I think reinforcing that it is possible and that they have to find their groove and what works for them. Even today, like in my doctoral program, my professors was like, you need to take notes. If I'm taking notes, I'm not listening. Because as soon as this pencil hits the paper, you no longer have my attention. So I know that it makes you feel uncomfortable that I am not taking notes in the traditional format, but that method just doesn't work for me. So I think teaching young kids that it's okay to be different in ways that contribute to your success. My message for teachers is not to try to fit a square peg into a round hole. Like, everything isn't gonna be the same. And I think that we have to look at practices that allow for differences and that allow for students to show up in ways that make sense for them. And I also think that, like, we have to be patient in this process. It took me till I was 14 before it finally clicked. That was after repeating the second grade. That was after having some form of interventions. I don't know. I would say that I didn't think they were interventions. Those packages with, like, tasks to complete on your own about filling in the word with a sentence. But I lacked the skills to do that. So those things didn't make sense. But sort of seeing, being patient along this process. And then I think with parents, recognizing the power that you have to advocate. I've spent a significant amount of time working one-on-one with parents and teaching them how to advocate for their child, even when they feel disempowered. So getting additional services and doing these additional things, it's inconvenient. You may have to take off of work. You may have to take meetings that are inconvenient, but if we can get this done early, it can set the stage for unlimited possibilities. My mom not going into work to go to an IEP or to have a conference with a teacher, like, those things made it possible for me to get here. And unfortunately, because I was one of maybe 25 to 35 students in a class, the teacher may not have had the capacity to slow down enough. So it really mattered that my parent, my mother was advocating for me along this process. And she was also teaching me how to advocate for myself. So you have to speak up. You have to say what you need and sort of working through that process.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much. This is so inspirational. It's certainly what the work that we do at CORE, where we work with teachers to actually help them understand first how reading works and what to notice early on and what to do about it. And your messages are so important, and I'm certain that your books are contributing to those messages. And thank you for working not only with kids and students, but also talking to parents who really do have to be an advocate for their children, even if they're in the face of denial from the system sometimes, which is difficult. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to thank you again and wish you well as you continue this journey. I actually ordered Prosper, so I'm excited. It hasn't come yet. So I'm really excited to get it and read it. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Linda.
From Cat in the Hat to reading a prescription label, from fractions to following a recipe, from writing an essay to writing a resume, what students learn in school impacts what they can achieve in life. At CORE, we believe that all students can become strong readers and master math. All it takes is teachers who have a deep knowledge of evidence-based instructional practices and ongoing support to implement them in their classrooms. CORE partners with schools and districts to help educators implement high-quality math and English language arts curricula, rigorous instruction, and effective assessment practices. By supporting teachers in their professional growth, we are ensuring that generations of young people learn to read, write, and do math so that all students, especially those who have been marginalized and traditionally underserved, can reach their full potential. Join us in our mission to help every teacher provide an outstanding education for each and every student. Learn more about CORE and our workshops, courses, and consulting services at corelearn.com.